Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks Sunday, June 9th, 2013. This is episode 986. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, like affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com. Use our offer code TechGuy. You'll get $10 off at checkout. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. And by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone service that just makes sense. You'll save money with Ting. You only pay for what you use, and Ting doesn't require a contract. Plus, you get unlimited devices on a single pool plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, of course, cell phones, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Heather Homan will be answering your call, ready to talk to you. As we say, release the hounds. I don't know if there are hounds, but if there were, we would release them.
We'll pretend there's hounds in the hound system.
There's my dog, Ozzy. There's a not exactly hound, a hound. He's more like a rat. So yesterday we did, you know, we talked about tech. You know, there's sometimes the news, the big national story is a tech story. In this case, I think it's probably true that and we talked about it a lot yesterday. And I even got some email from people saying, talk more about tech, not politics. But this is a tech story, this story about PRISM and the NSA and spying. Something that, you know, to anybody, as one of our callers said yesterday, who's been paying attention for the last decade or so, is not a surprise. But it came out over the week that the National Security Agency and others were spying on what we were up to, not illegally, legally, using provisions of the Patriot Act, and getting the getting the cooperation not only of Verizon Wireless, and we presume the other cell companies, but also of the big internet cloud companies, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Yahoo. And the question that came up, and this is a question that we cannot answer and did not answer yesterday, is, well, exactly what does that mean? I think some jumped to the conclusion, including Glenn Greenwald, who broke this story in The Guardian. And I respect Glenn. Glenn's a smart guy. Jumped to the conclusion that what the feds had was a backdoor into the data servers of all of these companies, that they could at will peer into what we're doing online. And I don't read it that way. Now, of course, we don't know for sure, and I think some ways this is a litmus test for how you feel about government and about privacy and about security. If you're a little more paranoid, a little more fearful of the government, you might think that they are lying to us. If you're a little more trusting, you might think that government, Google, and everybody else is telling the truth when they say, no, it's not a backdoor. Google, Larry Page said, what the... ... on the blog post. Mark Zuckerberg said, no. Everybody up and down has denied it, including the president, the NSA, and all of the tech companies. They say, what we've done is we've made an arrangement. We've made an arrangement with the Fed so that when they legally ask for information about our customers, we can provide it to them in a secure fashion. It's like a Dropbox. On our servers, yes, that they can come to, but better than packaging in a box and mailing it or emailing it. a secure way to get this information for the feds. And apparently there's enough information that's probably the only efficient way to do this. Google says, we fight every request. Our attorneys do everything they can, but if it's a legal request, we have no choice but to hand over the information. The only company that doesn't cooperate, oddly enough, is Twitter, which is, for the most part, a public... the traffic on Twitter is, for the most part, public anyway. Twitter says, well, we comply with any federal regulation, but we're not going to make it easy. We are not legally bound to give them a Dropbox. I don't know how much easier that makes it. And I think in some ways you could say, well, this protects the information a little bit better by making sure that only the people who have the legal right to see it, see it. Now, we can debate, and that is a political debate, over what rights the feds have to this information, what information they have the right to. They say, President Obama said yesterday, we're not reading your emails or listening to your calls, especially of U.S. citizens. What we're monitoring is the traffic from U.S. citizens outbound overseas. And we're not looking at the contents, but just the date, the time, the phone numbers involved, things like that. And, you know, with big data analysis, which is, you know, becoming better and better these days, it's possible to deduce quite a bit from just that much information. They don't need to read your emails. They just need to see the pattern emerge. And I don't think anybody doubts. In fact, nobody at this point is denying that this is happening, that the feds have the right to it, according to the Patriot Act. Members of the Congress, particularly Democrats, are up in arms and demanding more transparency from the Obama administration. I think rightly so. It's hard for us to have an informed conversation about this, about whether we're willing to give up this privacy in the name of more security against terrorists, unless we know the facts. So we need to know the facts. And the only people who can tell us the facts are the people who are actually doing this. They say, we can't tell you the facts. It's secret. It's secret for a reason. It's secret under the Patriot Act. It's secret under the FISA Act. Because if the terrorists knew what we were up to, they would hide. So that's the story. And we talked about it all a lot yesterday. We don't need to go into it in great detail, except for, in my opinion, the bottom line, whatever you believe, the most important thing to understand is that you are not, when you're online, you're not in private. For a long time, the IRS has held, and nobody has denied, their right to look at checks, credit card transactions, all of that data is fed into the federal system, has been for years, without search warrant, without due process, without oversight. And apparently cell phone logs and records, GPS data from your cell phone and all of that, also available without warrant to law enforcement locally and nationally. So just add to that list everything else you do online. And, you know, people have been so worried about, oh, Google's spying on me. Microsoft says, Google's spying on me. Yahoo says, we're going to start looking through emails for advertising. And people are up in arms about that. Folks, your ISP, your internet service provider, can see everything you're doing. They know where you're going, who you're sending to, unless you take precautions. The feds probably even more so. Just assume if it's online, it's public. And I certainly tell teenagers this because I think a lot of times, hey, I Snapchatted it, I Instagrammed it, I Facebooked it. That's private. No, it's not. And I'm not even worried about the feds. That stuff could be public in a heartbeat. Flip a switch. We just found out that Snapchat doesn't really delete those. They're all the pictures are still available in cache. If somebody gets your phone, they can get all that data off of there. You shouldn't do it on the internet if you want it to stay private, period. And the real question in my mind is how useful this is in fighting terrorism, really. Because means exist for you and me, and certainly for terrorists, to hide their tracks much more effectively. I think that's probably why the NSA and the president don't want this information to come out, and why they're calling for a criminal investigation of whoever leaked it, because they know the truth. If terrorists want to hide their tracks, they can. It's easy. The technology exists, as can you, with encryption and VPNs and all of that stuff. Just assume that everything you're doing is in public and act accordingly. I think that that's a safe, fair assumption. The internet is a public space. And embrace that. There's lots we can do out there. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. We could talk about that, certainly, but anything else having to do with technology, your computer, the internet, your cell phone, and all that, 888-827-5536. The website is techguylabs.com. techguylabs.com. And you'll find a link there. You'll find the phone number there, but you also find a link there to the chat, which is a great place to go. We probably won't allow political conversation there, but we have an unfiltered chat you can go to, or an off-topic chat where anything goes. But in the main chat, we try to stick to technology topics. The IRC.twit.tv. And by the way, the feds are absolutely watching that filtering everything that goes through there. So, you know, just be careful. As Cargoplex says in the chat room, naming my Wi-Fi network Al-Qaeda is probably not a good idea. Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. There's somebody with a Wi-Fi network, I don't know where it is, somewhere in this area, named FBI Surveillance Van. Now, I always assumed it was a joke, but maybe it's not. Maybe they're hiding in plain. I don't know. Let's assume it's true. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk right after this. They must be bored. That's right. Well, we know where our musical director, Nathan, stands. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Interesting conversation in the chat room. Well, you know, if Google, why is it worse that the government's tracking your data than if Google's tracking your data? Well, just my personal feeling about it, and of course you can have your own. But a malicious government could do a lot more harm, anything from IRS audits to warrantless imprisonment in Guantanamo Bay for an indefinite period if they don't like you. All Google could do is target ads at you. And frankly, I'd rather have targeted ads than untargeted ads. And I'm not too worried about Google throwing me in jail or auditing my tax return. So I think it is much more concerning when the government does this than when private industry does it. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's get to the phones. I'm going to ask my talented partner here, Heather Hammond. Who should I talk to next?
Well, we can start with a security question. You see line one? There's Dana and Rancho Cuca.
Manga. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Dana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
I am so happy to be your first caller.
Yay.
Of the day. I'm not really tech savvy at all, and I'm a little confused right now, but I just got the hotspot broadband.
Yeah.
And a new computer, and I don't know how to work it at all. Windows 8, of course. But it's the Asus Sonic Master, and it came with a Core i3 processor.
So what's your problem? I don't need to know. Probably don't need to know stats like that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about. My concern is real having the best security. And I know you've talked about the WPA2 is what's needed.
Yeah.
Okay, and when I come up on my hotspot, it says WPA.
That's fine. That's fine. The one you want to avoid is WEP. Any security is better than no security, even WEP. But WEP was cracked by the bad guys many moons ago and really isn't very effective. WPA is fine.
Okay.
WPA2 is very infinitesimally better, but not enough to worry about.
Okay. And would a router help in this instance for Wi-Fi only?
I think it is a router.
Oh.
It's doing that. I mean, if you can use more than one device on it, it's a router.
All righty. And then...
which means, by the way, it's a firewall, which means it's great. The bad guys are bouncing off of that instead of off your computer.
Okay. So even in an apartment compound.
Sure.
Okay, and then it's got only. I know you've talked about getting the jelly bean, and this only has ice cream sandwich.
Now you have a Windows 8 tablet or computer, right?
Right.
Right. But are you talking about getting an Android one now too? Because that's what jelly bean is Android. Windows 8, you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. So and then my...
You just want dessert. I know you.
I'm looking for the sweetie.
You just said, where's my jelly bean? No, that's for phones. That's not... You don't have to worry about that.
Okay, I don't even have a cell phone. But anyway, that's how you...
I'm really glad. You know what? It's really good, Dana, that you're asking these questions and that this awareness has sunk in because... it's people who don't understand this stuff who are the most vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
So you're doing it. You've got a Wi-Fi router with security turned on. Now, the good news about Windows 8 is it has built-in security software. It has a built-in firewall. It has a built-in virus and spyware scanner. So you're in pretty good shape with Windows 8. The one thing that you got to watch out for from now on is a bad guy to get onto your system has to get you to run some software. So there's two ways they can do that. One, by tricking you. So, like, do you have Facebook?
No, I don't have anything right yet. I just tried to get onto YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube's okay. But what will happen is maybe you'll get a message. It could be an email message. Could be this happens a lot on Facebook. That's why I bring it up. But it could be from any source where it looks like it's somebody you know. And they say, I have video that you will not believe. For me, I don't know if they do this for you, Dana, they say, of what you did last night. And I go, what? Wait a minute. What did I do last night? And so I get all flustered and I click that link. And then it looks like I'm on YouTube. And this is where you have to be careful. It looks like I'm on YouTube, except that it says, oh, you don't have the latest flash. And this is so common that people go, oh, yeah, of course I don't. I never have the latest flash. That happens all the time. And they click OK, and this is where the bad guy gets you. It wasn't really YouTube. It isn't really flash. You're downloading it. You run it. And what you did is you infected your computer because the bad guy tricked you. So that's one way they do it is by tricking you. So just be suspicious. When you're in your browser, look and see where you are and make sure it's where you think you are, not youtube.hacker.com. But YouTube.com, things like that.
YouTube.
Yeah, make sure, just look at the address and make sure it's not a fake version of YouTube. If it says YouTube.com and it's spelled right, not YOUTOOB, something like that,
okay,
then you're all right. And the other way they get on there is without your knowledge by not keeping Windows up to date. So the good news is Windows updates automatically. And you're going to be fine. That Microsoft's done a lot to make Windows much safer. I wouldn't worry too much. Just be kind of aware. Here's another one that gets a lot of neophytes. You get a call on the phone. Hello, this is Microsoft Tech Support. We were looking at your computer and we saw a lot of strange activity. We'd like to fix it.
No.
You know, Dana, you're smart.
So, yeah, I've been listening to you since the TV days.
Oh, that's great. So you understand that it's called social engineering. They just try to trick you into getting onto your computer. You're good. I think you're fine. You got Windows 8.1. Take a little time or 8.0, I think. 8.1 comes out this fall.
And it's a few weeks to go. Be paranoid.
Not so paranoid that you can't enjoy yourself.
Well, I was learning the computer at one point, and I was totally hacked down with a brand new Norton firewall.
Yeah.
3 months.
Yeah. It's so sad. I mean, the truth is any security software can be outrun if you let the bad guy do it, right? Because the security software, it's a fine balance. It has to give you enough permission to install stuff to run programs, or you'll get mad at it. So they let you, if you say, well, no, I really want to run this program I got from hacker.com, they're probably not going to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to have the security software, and Windows 8 comes with it. But it's also important that you kind of be not paranoid, just a little suspicious.
Yeah.
Look gift horses in the mouth.
I guess I'm not used to somebody watching out for me, you know, like Windows 8.
Dana, you're in good shape now. You stay in touch, okay?
Okay. Can I ask one short question?
Yeah.
I was real concerned when suddenly... my video came on, and I was on my own computer, and I can't understand what happened.
Well, your computer has a camera.
Yeah.
And there are programs that do that. If you install Skype, for instance, it might do that to test it. If you install, there's different programs that might turn on your camera. Usually it'll ask your permission before it does that.
It didn't.
But you know what I would do if I were you, Dana? I'd get a little piece of masking tape and just put it over that camera.
That's what I was going to do.
It's perfectly okay to do that, and when you want to use it, just take.
Would YouTube do that?
No. Well, what if you accidentally clicked? I want to leave a comment. Yes. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but LegalZoom is a very cool way to get paperwork done, legal paperwork done. A lot of it doesn't really require, you know, the expense of a full-time attorney. This I have learned. And if you're starting a business, you probably don't have the money to spend on a full-time attorney. When I wanted to start Twit, my podcast company, I created a limited liability company, LLC. It's a simple thing to do because it's what they call pass-through taxation. It's still treated as if, you know, you're the sole proprietor, but it limits your liability. In other words, you know, if you go under, they can't take your house, things like that. Look at that, $99. You don't need a lawyer. It's very easy. That's how I did it. Just walk through a questionnaire. Incorporation, same idea, more sophistication, S-Corp or C-Corp, still $99. Here's one I wish I'd known about. I didn't do this. I did it myself. And then we went back to a lawyer. He said, yeah, that wasn't very good. Your trademark. You should trademark. If you're a blogger and you've got, OMG Chad, you've got a special blog name or whatever, $169 to trademark it. If you've got a family, if you've got assets, you've got to have a last will. I know you don't want to think about it, but it's only $69. It'll take you, an hour to do. And then you decide what happens to your assets, to your kids, not the courts. And here's a new thing that LegalZoom does that I love. They have the LegalZoom legal plan. They have attorneys in almost every state that they've vetted, that they've set a fixed price, very reasonable fixed price for, so you can ask them questions. You can even see the attorney's profile and unedited reviews online, so you choose the right attorney for you. So, you know, a lot of this stuff, I didn't have the help of an attorney, but if you want to go through it and you get to a question, you go, well, I'd like to talk to somebody, you can do that too. LegalZoom.com for business, for life. And if you mention Tech Guy when you check out at LegalZoom.com, we'll give you $10 back. Start your business. Protect your family today at LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm. Self-help services at your specific direction. But you can speak to a legal plan attorney and get your questions answered and get ongoing advice. Just use our offer code TechGuy on checkout. We'll get you $10 back. Just as a way of saying thank you for letting them know you heard about it on the Tech Guy podcast. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TechGuy. Mike is in Agnes, Texas, our next caller. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
When I use my password manager and copy the username and password out of that and into a banking account or whatever secure account I want to go to, mm-hmm. are those keystrokes discernible by anyone other than in my group here?
Not unless you have some malicious software on your system.
Okay, and
Here's the deal. If you have a keystroke logger on your keyboard, or you have software logging your keystrokes on your computer, you've been infected, or worse, somebody's gotten into your system and put a physical thing on there, then, of course, all bets are off. You're being monitored, and even cut and paste, they could see what's in the clipboard with the right software. So at that point, you're compromised. The question is not, am I safe? The question is, how do I get rid of this thing? Now, if you're not compromised, yeah, those password wallets are a great idea. And you could type, too, because nobody's watching your keystrokes unless you're compromised.
Okay. With ESET, I should be clear of that kind of software.
Yeah. I mean, as told Dana, last caller, no security software will protect you against yourself. So if you... Because they have to let you install software. There is, I've seen security software that is so draconian that it won't even let you install software. But people immediately remove that because it's just a pain in the behind. So ESET and everything else lets you, if you say, hey, no, I want to install this. Windows even asks you, right? It goes, are you sure you want to install? Where did this come from? And you still say yes, they can't stop you. So this is why hackers try to trick you. They try to, convince you that, oh, no, this is benign. You should install this. I understand your paranoia, but don't go crazy about it. If you're using a wireless keyboard, make sure it has encryption turned on. I mean, if you're using a wireless keyboard in public, in some of the keyboards, wireless keystrokes can be intercepted. A cut and paste is safe. But if there's bad stuff on your computer, a cut and paste isn't safe. They can read the clipboard just like anything else. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. You've got ESET. You're smart. You're not going to let bad guys put stuff on your system. I think you're fine. You know, it would be a shame for us to act, you know, it's the same thing with terrorism. There's a direct analogy here. I'm gonna whip out the old Ben Franklin quote. He who would trade liberty for some temporary security deserves neither. Why is that apropos? Because at some point you can be so paranoid that you've given up all your freedom. You've given up the pleasure of computing. You know, if you're really paranoid, get offline. Don't use credit cards. Use cash. Live in a mountain cabin. And you probably want to put black netting above you so that the black helicopters can't see you. But I don't know if I want to live that way. Do you? No. So use the internet. Don't worry about it. Just take some simple, sensible precautions. Be aware that there are bad guys out there trying to get on your system. You don't need to be paranoid. Have a good security program, and mostly just, you know, be suspicious when people try to do, you know, install stuff on your system. And, oh, very, very, very important, update your operating system and your software regularly. The most at-risk software nowadays is the stuff that plugs into your browser so that you can do stuff on the internet. Because if you're doing stuff on the internet, then you're letting somebody into your system. And if the software that is doing that is compromised, whether it's the browser or Adobe Reader or Java or Flash, then a bad guy can put something sneaky on a website and Flash will go, yeah, I'm going to run that thing because it's a Flash animation. It's dancing bears. And it turns out it's not dancing bears. It's an infection. So it's important that you keep Flash up to date, Java up to date, anything that's your browser's up to date and your operating system up to date. Anything that you go online with is the most likely cause of infection. People aren't going to infect you through your Microsoft Word unless you have it set up so that it automatically runs Word documents on the internet, something like that. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's move on. I know if you listen to the show, you might get paranoid. I don't want you to get paranoid. I use the internet all the day, every day, all the time. Ken in Simi Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Well, I'm paranoid, but that's irrelevant for this call.
Even paranoids have enemies, you know? It's just nothing you can do about it.
Well, I was very happily watching TV all over the internet with an older laptop running my flat screen through VGA. Now, the TV died, so I'm replacing it, but the new TVs don't have VGA ports.
No, they don't. They have HDMI, don't they?
They do. So I was looking at converters, and I came across two things. First of all, there's a whole bunch of things that claim to be active VGA to HDMI converters. But then there's also on Amazon a thing that claims to be a USB to HDMI converter.
Yeah.
And I scratch my head, though, and I say, but if the video signal isn't on the USB port, is it? It hasn't gone through the video card yet.
Those USB dongles have some software on the computer that says, hey, send the video out that way. And it's a very common way of doing this nowadays. Here's the deal. VGA is an analog output port. And, of course, your flat panel TV wants a digital input. So the converters that take VGA and turn them into HDMI, they're not just, you know, wiring converters. They're not passive. As you say, they're active. They're circuitry. And so they're more expensive because they have to take an analog signal and digitize it. They have a DSP chip in there. There's, you know, a little processor in there. If you can get it out of the USB port, it's cheaper and simpler because it's digital coming out.
Okay.
It'll be better quality as well.
It might be, yeah, that was the other thing. Yeah. It might be better quality.
The only issue, and this can be an issue, is that USB isn't super fast. So if you have USB 3, use that instead.
Oh, I don't.
It's fine. I've used USB monitors and they're fine. It won't be super high res, but a TV screen is not. And it might have to do a little bit of compression. I think you get good results. I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, it's a converter thing that goes between HDMI.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
But because it's digital coming out, it doesn't have to do as much work.
Okay. Well, is this a sane alternative to Roku?
Yeah. What software are you running on the computer? Are you running Media Center or?
Oh, as little as possible.
But you're watching TV on your computer. You're running some software.
Well, sure. Well, it's Windows Vista.
Yeah, you're probably using Media Center. So yeah. Roku has more channels available to it. Maybe more capabilities. It is HDMI. I like Roku. I mean, I think there's some real advantages to using Roku. Then you don't have to tie up the laptop.
Yeah.
You're going to get a better quality picture, and you have much more variety to choose from.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Everybody's doing it. This is the new thing, right? Figuring out how to get internet into your TV. Most new TVs, in fact, I would say almost all, except for the very, very lowest price TVs, have internet connection built in and smart software. They're called, you could tell because it says this is a smart TV. And I don't necessarily think you should buy a smart TV. I think a dumb TV with a smart box attached to it might be a smarter idea because the smart box can be upgraded. You can get a different kind. Whereas the TV is kind of the way it is, and occasionally they'll update it. My experience with smart TV software is quality varies a lot. So get a Roku. Rokus are great. $100 or less. They get thousands of channels. Really fine. Really great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We have some trouble.
It is the motto. Don't worry. Be happy. Be happy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I remember taking my son, who graduated from high school on Friday. Congratulations, Henry. I remember taking my son and to all of the 2013 grads this year. That's a big step. As somebody once said, now it gets hard. You have no idea how easy you've had it. I took my son, Henry, to see Bobby McFerrin. Right about when this song was a hit, and Bobby was doing his vocal jazz, which was a cappella crazy jazz stuff. Henry was maybe 4 or 5. And he said, Daddy, is that guy crazy? Is he insane? I said, no, it's just singing. Oh, he didn't get it at all. Karen in Johnston, Rhode Island. Oh, I know where you are. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Grew up in Providence myself.
Okay. Yeah. My question for you is, I've been operating my computer without a virus protection because I'm just too cheap right now. but I can get McAfee through Cox. I think it's free. But the people that I've been asking questions to keep telling me that it's not good enough and I need to get Norton.
No, I hate both. I hate McAfee and Norton. I hate them both. With a passion that burns like the fire of 1,000 suns.
Okay.
However, are you running Windows, what version?
7.
Good news. Microsoft offers offers a free and excellent antivirus program for cheapskates called Microsoft Security Essentials.
Microsoft Security Essentials, okay.
And you can go to Microsoft.com/MSE, I think, or Security Essentials, if not that, and Microsoft.com/Security Essentials, and get it for free. That's good. But, you know, the reason is it's still not the best antivirus out there. There's better commercial ones. However, the most important thing, as I've said several times this hour already, is what you do. Because a bad guy has to get on your system somehow. So if you keep your system up to date, you update all the stuff that goes online. Java, if you have it, better not to at all if you don't need it. Flash, Adobe Reader. If you keep those up to date, you keep Windows up to date, and use an up-to-date browser, then the antivirus doesn't have to be the best in the world. And Microsoft Security Essentials is adequate. And did I mention, and your behavior is the most important thing. So when the guy calls and says, I'm calling for Microsoft tech support and I'd like to get into your system, say, no, thank you. No, thank you. When you get an instant message from a friend who says, you should see the video of you last night, don't click that link.
No, I wouldn't.
Yep. When you get an email and by the way, they'll come from friends because they've been infected. When you get an email from a friend that says, I've got amazing pictures you won't believe, just open this file, don't do it.
I have gotten those.
Of course you have. We all have. Yeah, don't fall for it. And, you know, if you're good about that stuff, then the antivirus is really secondary.
Okay, great. And Which browser do you prefer?
I use Chrome, the Google Chrome browser. IE has some kind of significant issues. Internet Explorer, the Windows version. I would prefer that you used Chrome, or Opera is good, or Firefox is good, but Chrome is my favorite.
Okay, sometimes Firefox doesn't work on everything.
Yeah, use Chrome then. And sometimes you have to use Internet Explorer, but it's best to use it as little as possible. There's some serious bugs, even in the most recent Internet Explorer. They've done some stupid stuff. And even though they really tried hard to make it secure, until they fix that, I would say you can't get rid of it. It's part of Windows, but don't use it as your default browser. Wow, I never heard that sound before. Does that ever happen to you with your smartphone? You hear something that you never heard before, and you go, I don't know what it's doing. Something's going on. I don't think that wasn't my phone. That was something else. Mike in Jefferson City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk data destruction.
Yes, Leo, I need a anti-carbonite.
So you got reel-to-reel, like IBM reel-to-reel tapes?
Yes, and
wow.
We've gone off to, you know, different media, of course, but I've got like 12 of them, and I need to make sure, can you pour like Windex in a bucket on them? And I don't want to cause the fire alarms to go off in the Capitol.
Yeah.
I just want to...
Well, what we used to do is degauss them. But that means going out and buying a big electromagnet.
I've got one, but I need something that's really trustworthy. I'm not sure if I trusted that or not.
Well, you're right, because degaussing might leave a few stray ones and zeros behind.
Right.
And if you really say, this has to be absolutely clean, the only way to do it is to first degauss, then destroy. Do you have a shredder handy?
No, we did that about 3 years ago, and these 12 got missed, and they don't want to spend another, you know, a lot of money. Just had this great big truck come through.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Although you could get go to Staples and get a $50 shredder, and just take the tape off the reel and run it through the shredder. That'd be sufficient if you degauss it and you shred it. Admittedly, if somebody's determined, if somebody works for a major three-letter government agency, they already have your data anyway. Never mind. But if they do and they want to get it, they probably can take the time. I've seen people piece together shredded stuff. So get a cross-cut shredder that makes it confetti.
Yeah.
And then you can have a little party. That makes it very hard. And then strew it, you know, put it in four different garbage cans and put it out separate weeks and mix it up good. I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
The key is degauss first, then destroy the medium.
Okay. Alrighty.
Or you can get, what was the name of President Nixon's secretary? Remember the reach? What was her? You remember the name? You're good. If you can remember
Gladys
that name,
Alice. I can picture her.
Rosemary Woods, Dr. Mom, you win the prize.
Ding, 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 ding.
Let's send her $10, a gift certificate for her local pizza. No, we have no prizes. I should arrange prizes for occasions like these. We did a segment on the screensavers, my old TV show with my buddy Patrick Norton, who was a want to use big, heavy implements like sledgehammers to destroy things. And we were going to show you how to destroy a hard drive. You know, the British intelligence spec is that you degauss the plate, you open the hard drive, and there's metal platters in there, right? You degauss the platters, you then grind them up to a fine dust. And then you store them in a safe in the basement. They don't even let the dust out. They store it. Patrick said, we don't need to do that, but we are going to show you how to take a metal platter out of a hard drive and destroy it. What he didn't know is that sometimes those platters aren't metal. Sometimes they're glass. We opened up a hard drive. He took a hammer to it, and whoosh, glass went flying everywhere on live TV. Thank goodness nothing got stuck in my epidermis. It would have been quite as... You'd be seeing it on YouTube today. But then we have Kevin Rose, who was one of our tech guys. We called him the Dark Tipper because we gave him all the sneak. He used thermite. Packed his PC case with thermite, which is an incendiary explosive, and almost burned his house down. That's for another story for another day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today is brought to you by my buddies, and I say buddies because we use their product every single day, every day, all day, here at the Brick House Studios by Ring Central. It's our phone system. Show you my Ring Central phone. I don't know if I can reach. Looks just like a regular phone. Can you see that? Yeah, it looks just like a regular phone. two-line set, Polycom, very nice. But it's not your typical phone. It's a Ring Central phone. That means it's no PBX. It's connected to the Ring Central switch in the cloud, where we can do all sorts of things, phone trees. We can have faxes go to our email. We can have voicemail go to our email. When this phone rings, I have it set up so that my Ring Central app on my smartphone rings. When I make a call on my smartphone, I route it through Ring Central so it looks like it's coming from the company line, and of course the company pays. Text messages to the Ring Central app, that's cool. If somebody sends a text message to our 800 number, it will go to my phone, text messages through the Ring Central app. So there's business SMS. Ring Central is amazing. They have a new thing. They just did the business SMS, and they have Salesforce integration. All of this because it's software. It's a cloud-based system, so they can add features all the time. I am a big fan of Ring Central, and I want you to try it. We've got a 30-day risk-free trial and a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Ring Central is easy on the wallet, too. As the boss, as somebody who actually pays for this system, it's $20 per month per user, and that includes toll-free long distance, includes fax, all these great features. As little as $20 per month per user. So a new employee comes in, we give them the phone, they plug it in, they're good to go. You can visit ringcentral.com, use the promo code TWIT for our special no-risk trial. Or call 800-543-9980. 800-543-9980. Ringcentral.com. It's true. Russell was the guy who told us about it, and somebody in the chat room says, don't mention a PBX system in front of Russell. He'll flip out and start foaming at the mouth. I don't know about that, but Russell, our IT guy, does not want to program a PBX, and he doesn't want somebody coming in from the phone company by any means. So he's the one who got us started with Ring Central and has installed it for many clients. Loves it. RingCentral.com. Promo code Twitter. Call 800-543-9980. Big fan. This is one product that all of our advertisers I'm big fans of, but this is one that we use every single day and can really vouch for. RingCentral.com. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, Arrested Development, Game of Thrones, and House of Cards. 88. So here's the deal. 8888 asked Leo. We do kind of sometimes, Heather and me, talk about TV, but the reason is because there's a tech connection, right? So the tech connection for House of Cards and Arrested Development is that they're produced by Netflix, which is a big, you know, shift for Netflix to become the HBO of streaming media. And I think they picked two very good shows to do.
Exactly.
And did a great job with lots of money. Helps to have lots of money.
They hit the park.
They did. And then Game of Thrones, just because geeks like Game of Thrones. And tonight's the last, you know, episode for the season 3. We're still in shock. I'm not going to say anything. No spoilers. But we're still in shock after the last episode. They took a break after the last episode. And they gave us the Liberace movie in that time slot, which was very jarring. Very jarring. Now I know it. Everybody on Twitter was talking about it. No, they were talking about something else. 8888 asked Leo, we could talk about tech, computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater. Our photography guy, digital photographer extraordinaire Chris Marquardt, joins us at 3:30, actually 33 and a third after the hour, to do a little photographic myth busting and to prime the pump for our photo assignment. We do one of those every month. That's fun. Let's get back to the phones, though. And our next caller is from Montreal, from Quebec. Alain, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alain.
Hi. Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Yeah, good. Hi, Leo. Actually, I just want to start to say I'm like one of your biggest fans for the past 10 years now.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've been following you since the Tech TV days, and also with Amber MacArthur, Alex Lindsay, Kevin Rose, and all that. I mean,
did you ever see that Screensavers episode where Kevin Rose blows up a computer with thermite to destroy the hard drive inside and almost sets his backyard on fire? Do you remember that?
No.
It's on YouTube, it turns out.
I only started watching it when he was in Canada. So
ah,
yeah, okay. I only saw the call for help. Tech TV.
That was fun. After Tech TV went under in the U.S., I went to Canada for 3 years and did the show for Rogers up there. And that's where I met Amber, who's wonderful, and Andy and Sean and the gang. It was so much fun.
Also, Steve Gibson also was there.
That's right. I brought all my friends. I dragged them up to Toronto.
And it's really cool that, you know, they're all on the Twit Network now.
Well, you know, it's hysterical, and James is reminding me of this in our chat room. They're still airing all those old shows in Canada. Amber, she said, every once in a while, they show the episode where Amber discovered YouTube when it first came out 5-6 years ago. And it makes her look kind of dumb because she says, I just found this new site called YouTube, and you can put your videos on there. And if you didn't know that this was taped in 2006, you would go, wow, that Amber's really, really a tech expert. She just discovered YouTube. So just remember when you're seeing old Call for Help episodes in Canada on Rogers that they're really old and tech does not age very well. Alain, what can I do for you?
Actually, I'm calling you because me and my friend, we started a small business, and my friend invented like a new device, a stand. And we had some questions regarding the shipping and the warehousing, because I know that you talked about stamps.com, but I don't know if there's like a solution that englobes like checking out.
You need a stamps.com for Canada because it's U.S. only. You want more than just stamps. You want what's called fulfillment.
Yeah, fulfillment center.
How big is the object that you sell?
It's pretty small. It's a credit card size for an iPhone.
Okay. The real issue with mailing from Canada to other countries, just as it is from the U.S. to other countries, is customs and tariffs.
The product is going to be shipped in the U.S. I have my friend on the line who actually set up the whole company.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Yeah, he could explain to you more about it.
Well, that's one thing a lot of Canadian companies do. I have friends who are Canadian. They started a company called Manpax. They send you underwear. Every 3 months I get my underwear from these guys. But they're in Canada, but that's okay because they ship from Virginia or something like that. So, yeah, that's the way to do it if most of your business is going to be in the U.S. And you can do that. You know, I would also look at Amazon. Amazon is a very good solution for a lot of small businesses. A lot of small businesses let Amazon do the fulfillment. I'm not sure exactly how that works or how much they take. There's certainly companies that do this, fulfillment companies, and I'm sure fulfillment companies that specialize in overseas shipping and so forth. But I would think Amazon, given that they have Amazon.ca, the Canadian version, as well as Amazon.com, would be a very good choice. Arbiter in our chat room says, Newegg does this too. Of course, it'd be if it's a techie product, which it sounds like it might be. Newegg would be a good choice. Dr. Mom is offended by my talking about my underwear. I'm sorry, Dr. Mom. I didn't mean to bring up a visual. It was about shipping. They ship my pants. That's right. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We'll move on right now very quickly. Samson in Chatsworth, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Samson. They ship my underpants. That's no better, is it? Samson, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Hi, Samson. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Turn off the radio so you don't, actually, I think you've got the internet on, so turn that off because we don't want the echo to confuse you.
Oh, yeah, my dad just turned it off.
Thanks, Dad. How old are you, Samson?
I'm 13 years old.
Okay. What can I do to help you?
I just wanted to call you about a laptop.
Okay.
I don't know the laptops I want. I know the requirements.
Did Dad say it's time to get you a laptop? Are you going into high school or junior high school?
I'm going to eighth.
Eighth grade. Yeah, that's a good time to get a laptop. Did Dad say he'd buy it for you?
He said that he might, and it could be for my bar mitzvah.
Perfect. Oh yes, that'd be a good bar mitzvah gift. So, do you have a budget?
The budget, we'd probably like under 500, I guess.
No, no. Tell Dad it has to be 600 or 700.
Okay.
Is Dad listening? I'm trying to help you out here, Samson. Cheap isn't good, really, in a laptop. But maybe we can get 500. That's a little low. Do you want Windows? You have to have Windows at that price.
Yeah, I'd like Windows.
Yeah. Unfortunately, netbooks, remember those? You probably don't, but a few years ago, Asus started it and others followed in their footsteps selling $300 laptops, and they were terrible. But they set
the seashells?
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, my dad has one.
Yeah, well, what does he think? Does he like it?
He got it because he was just looking for small and light.
They're very
light.
Small, and they're very light. They're very cheap.
He likes it okay.
It's okay. But they're not great. They have cheap components. They're slow. They don't have a lot of memory, a lot of storage. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happens. But unfortunately, it set the expectation. And people said, well, why should I pay, $600 bucks for a laptop when I get one for $350 bucks? Well, you do get what you pay for.
Okay.
So I really, somebody in the chat room says, netbooks are so fifth grade. Yeah, that's back when you were in fourth grade. You probably weren't too aware of it. I would say that Dell... if you're price sensitive, Acer is a good low price leader. And let me take a break and talk to you about Windows 8 laptops to think about. Hold on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're helping Samson buy a computer for the 8th grade. Still there, Samson?
Yes, I am.
I've been listening to the chat room, and they've been giving me some good solutions under $500. For instance, I like the ThinkPad Twist. It's a Lenovo Windows 8 laptop. I really think if you get a Windows 8 computer, you should absolutely get Touch. And that's why $500 gets to be a kind of touchy price point.
Yeah, I on the break, I talked to my dad, and I asked him if under $1,000 would be good, and he said that it'd be better if it was under $600.
Yeah, all right. Because, well, I'll give you some choices in that $500-$600 range.
Because I'd like to, game on it and Skype and...
Yeah, Skype's not going to be a problem. Gaming, it depends on the game. Some games, you're not going to play...
Like Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft will be fine on this. Minecraft's not very demanding, yeah. I would... And Minecraft with Touch is awesome. I would look at the Lenovo refurbished ThinkPad. We'll put a link in the chat notes to this. This is the Twist. It's normally $900, but Lenovo's selling refurbished ones, which is fine. It just means somebody opened the box and said, no, I'm going to send it back. Mm-hmm. And those are under $500. On Amazon, you can also find the Asus VivoTab. This might be the lowest priced solution out there. The VivoTab is very affordable and not too bad.
What me and my dad were also thinking was, I could get a laptop, and then I could get a monitor and a keyboard. I could just plug it into the laptop and put the laptop on my desk.
Yeah.
And
so
work. Yeah.
That's a very good idea. And then that way you have best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would definitely do that. So then that means the laptop has to be maybe under $500 so that you can afford to do that. I think there's some good choices from Lenovo. Lenovo.
Mm-hmm.
They make the ThinkPad, and they make some very good Windows 8 laptops. Asus, A-S-U-S.
Mm-hmm.
Acer, A-C-E-R. All of those are good choices, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
And Dell. Hey, good luck, Samson. That's exciting.
Yes, it is.
And
thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks to Dad, too, for funding the enterprise. It's funny, when my son graduated, a number of people came up and congratulated me. And I said, well, I didn't do anything. They said, what are you talking about? How many times did you drive him to school? Oh, about 8,000. How many computers? How much, Yeah, you're right. I guess you're right. Dad does a little bit. Dad and Mom do a little bit. But really, Henry did all the work. Well, he did as little as he could get away with, but he did all the work that was done. Let's put it that way. Thank you, Samson. Good luck. Enjoy 8th grade. Fred in L.A., Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Fred.
Yes, sir. How are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, in the words of my late great-grandfather, I'm just as happy as if I didn't have right good sense.
Yeah, it does help if you have no sense. You tend to be maybe a little happier. It's the ones of us who are paying out attention that are the most outraged these days.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, listen, I was wondering what would be the most economical, if not gratis, way of promoting my band website. I got a new band website.
That's great. What kind of music?
Smooth jazz, R&B.
That's wonderful. Giveaway music, that's one way to do it. I would definitely participate in the social networks, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. And Google+ is up and coming, while Facebook seems to be slowly fading behind the pack, believe it or not. Do you know about SoundCloud?
Is that that new...
It's a site where you can put your music and share it. It's a social music site. A lot of musicians are doing this now. And the reason I say give it away is don't be afraid of giving it away. Because
right.
That's how you build fans. Anybody who is, these days, I think, a blogger, a broadcaster, a musician, a writer, job one is to build a community.
Right.
If you can get that done, I think musicians kind of know this intuitively. If you can get that done, and it doesn't have to be huge, 1,000 people, more than enough. If you can build a community of 1,000 people who care deeply about you, they'll take care of the rest. They'll market for you. They'll share. Look at groups like Umphrey's McGee, very good example. They have really built their community by giving away music, by doing things like they just started doing this. You can they're getting a drawing to wear headphones at the concert and hear the board mix. They do special.
Is that right?
Isn't that cool?
Umphrey's
McGee is a very good model for a band that has done everything they can to support their fans. And when you do that, the fans support you.
Now, how are you spelling Umphrey's?
Umphreys.com. They do a lot of things. They at the end of a concert, you can buy a USB key with the music you just heard. They used to do CDs, but it's faster now. To the USB keys. They have special concerts for fans that are open only to fans. They put a lot of their music online. And I think all of this, when you're beginning and building a fan base, it's best to give it away, to be generous, to support your fans. Look at even the Grateful Dead really understood this kind of intuitively with the taper movement.
The old word of mouth adage.
Yes, it's the best marketing. Now, of course, you have to be a good band. The negative on this is the old school marketing could perhaps get a lousy band to the forefront. I'm thinking New Kids on the Block. I'm thinking, you know, really great marketing can take a band that's not so great and convince people they want to hear it. That doesn't work with word of mouth. You have to actually be great. But if you're good at what you do and you build a fan base, and it's music is just one of... Really, anything. I see photographers doing this now, painters, poets, writers, bloggers, vloggers, video loggers. Everybody's doing this. SoundCloud is great for anybody who's doing audio of any kind. It's free to store a small amount of music, and they have pro accounts if you want to put more. Many bands put it up there. Another thing I'd think about, if you do a mix, Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, did this. It was so cool. They took some of the Nine Inch Nails songs, and they put out garage band versions of their songs so that you could mix it yourself, each track. Clever idea. So the fundamental premise of this is the best marketing, and you know this is true, is word of mouth. When other people tell their friends, hey, you got to hear this band, they're great, that's better than any marketing you could do. So the key is to build this dedicated fan base who voluntarily, willingly will go out there and support you. They'll buy the albums. I've mentioned before Amanda Palmer, interesting case study there. She was with the Dresden Dolls, very successful band, had a record label. Their last album only sold 25,000 copies, and the record company terminated her. They said, it's not enough. We can't do it. So she went to Kickstarter to make her next album and said, hey, I want to do an album. And Kickstarter is a site where you kind of crowdsource money. She raised more than $1 million, I think. I'll have to look. Maybe 100. I'll have to check. From guess how many people? 25,000 people. Success. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt is our digital photography guru. He's the photo guy, host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, and a professional photographer. He's back from Ireland, and he's rested, and he's tanned. No, he's not tanned. You were in Ireland. What am I saying? He's waterlogged. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's going well. What do you want to talk about today? Oh, well, I want to talk about one thing.
Yeah, okay. Somebody's... Oh, by the way, I have an echo of myself on the ear.
Well, don't ask me. It's not my fault.
Well,
we don't have the capability of doing that. I don't know. It happened last time, too.
Oh, well.
I don't know what to do.
We'll get through it.
Hey, John, he's got an echo. I think it's nothing we can do.
Okay.
Just try to pretend that you don't hear yourself back.
Yeah, I'll go la, 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 la.
So my son's graduation, I thought I'd give him a camera.
Okay.
And Trey Ratcliffe, as you know, one of our favorite photographers, the king of HDR, his website, stuckincustoms.com. He's made really quite a career for himself as a photographer. Kind of like you, came from a tech background. You worked at HP, right?
I did, yes, for over 10 years.
He worked at Accenture. He was one of them business consultants, management consultant types. And said, I like this hobby. I want to do this full time. So Trey just went to China. I think he's just got back from China. And he did something kind of unheard of. Trey is a Nikon shooter. And that means he carries around that big D3. It weighs about 400 pounds with all the lenses and stuff. And like a lot of people, including myself, he said, I want to go something lighter. Now, I went to the Olympus OMD, which I like a lot. It's a mirrorless Micro Four Third. But he's shooting the Sony NEX-7. Now, the positive on the NEX-7 is it's a big sensor. It's an APS-C sensor, bigger than the Micro Four Thirds. The negative is not nearly the same number of lenses available. You have to use a Sony E-lens. Micro Four Thirds is great because there's so many affordable lenses.
That's true. You have a huge ecosystem there.
So I gave my son, I said, all right, I'm going to give him a... So I gave him a Sony NEX-7. He's very excited. I said it because it's lightweight. He wants to do, video. He wants to do fisheye video of his skateboarding friends. He wants to take pictures. I said, there's one deal. You got to send me pictures from back from college. Once a month, I want a picture. At least one.
Did it work? Did he send anything?
Well,
back?
We'll see. He's going in the fall. I'll find out. I'll let you know.
Okay.
So what do you think of these new mirrorless cameras? We've talked about this a little bit before, and in particular
of
this.
It's an exciting system.
It is, isn't it? And the Sony seems to be really good.
Absolutely exciting. And the Sonys are really good, but many others are as well, especially the Micro Four Thirds. As you said, there's a huge ecosystem. You get lots of lenses, and you can adapt your old SLR lenses to them with adapters. Pretty much any lens you can put on those. And the sensors are getting really, really good. I still have a hard time letting go of my full frame sensor, the 35mm sensor, because I told you I shoot large format 4x5 inches film, so the sensor size of the film size for me is really important. But if I shoot digital, it's the full frame 35, and I'm on the fence to go to the Micro Four Thirds format. Actually,
I'm kind of with you because I broke out for a graduation dinner. I broke out the 5D Mark II with its full frame, beautiful full frame sensor, and I broke out
it scares people, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's gigantic. I'd forgotten how huge it is, and I broke out my very nice 85mm f/1.2 lens, and I got probably the best picture I've ever taken.
Oh, this is wonderful from the graduation dinner, my son,
and I'm just so happy about it. I don't think I could have gotten this with a Micro Four Thirds because of the depth of field and the bokeh. And I think that small sensor, I'm not sure I'd have gotten anything like that.
There are a few tricks you can do if you want to get the bokeh, if you want to get the autofocus background with a smaller sensor camera. You can use a longer focal length, more telephoto,
for example.
Try to get closer. That will give you a bit more of the background autofocus.
I tell you, I love, and I made it black and white because I just really wanted to focus on the people.
Oh, the one you just showed us, really, the white shirt of him.
The patterns on the shirts, the checks and stuff, yeah.
And then the focus is there as well. So he's clearly the focus of the picture, clearly the subject.
Yeah, it's fun. And the bokeh is really nice on the 85 millimeter.
Yes, it is.
I have to
say. And the lens you use there really has a big part of playing.
It's a spectacular lens, I have to say. Sometimes they say, you know, the old adage is it's not the camera, it's the photographer. In my case, it's absolutely the camera because I'm a crappy photographer. But every once in a while, I get a good shot. So I didn't do so bad for my son, huh? The NEX,
oh,
I think that's all right.
Okay. I like those features.
Yeah, yeah. So what's our myth of the day?
Well, the myth is you must use a tripod to take long exposures.
Oh yeah, no, that's true.
It's one of my pet peeves, the stability that photographers put into their photography, because there are some people who don't seem to get any camera shake, right? Some people who always get in focus pictures, and some people always get camera shake. And I mean, we know that a longer focal length makes it harder. There are lots of systems to help you, such as image stabilizers in the lenses or in the cameras themselves. But a lot of that stability comes from very tiny little things that you can do yourself that don't need anything specific in the camera. And I just wanted to talk about a few of those. Number one, your stance. How do you stand? Are you on your tiptoes? You have both feet flat on the ground. That will already give you more stability. Where are your hands? Is one on the camera and the other somewhere else? Or do you have both hands on the camera? Just that simple fact of having both hands at the camera will give you more stability, give you less camera shake. Where do you hold the camera? Do you hold it on your outstretched arm or closer to yourself? If you tuck in your elbows, you will have more stability. If you stretch them out, your arms won't have much stability.
You told me a really funny little trick. Do you still do this? Have a string?
Yeah, the poor man's tripod. Yeah.
So to have a string and you hold it in both hands and you step on it with your feet. So it's going to be long enough to loop around, right?
Well, what you do is you get a screw that fits in your tripod mount of the camera.
Okay.
And you tie the string to that and you drop it to the ground.
Oh, okay.
Or even make a loop like a triangle that you put your feet in. And pull it up against.
And then you tighten it as tight as you can, and that's going to be pretty steady.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be super tight. Just tight enough to give it more stability. Well, if lots of photographers go to a lower vantage point, like they squat. If you squat, try to keep one knee on the ground.
Right.
That will give you more stability. Maybe even lean your elbow on that knee. So that will, together with the camera, that will be kind of extend the ground up to the...
Now, it's not good for really long exposures, but I do like taking a monopod with me. That's just not... Instead of a three-legged, it's a single leg.
What I just told you is pretty much you are turning into a monopod. Yeah,
like right.
Your elbow on your knee, your foot on the ground.
Yeah.
So
you wouldn't want to do a 30-second exposure like that. But.
No, of course not. but I mean, we're talking the difference between, let's say, a 50th of a second and a 20th of a second.
Right.
And that 20th of a second, the shots you took of your son, some of those were in low lights.
Well, I had a very fast lens. You're right. In fact, I was talking to Henry about the old rule of thumb. Now, I guess it's a little different if you're not using a full-frame camera, but the old rule of thumb for film cameras was you take the length of the lens, say 50 millimeters, and divide it in half, and that means that the slowest shutter speed you could reasonably handhold is 1/25th. Of a second.
Right. And which, by the way, tells you that the wider angle you are, the more you will get away with.
And the more telephoto, the longer the lens, the less you get away with.
Try to hold binoculars steady, and you will see what I mean.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Here's one last tip. One very last tip. Use the viewfinder, like the one you put your eye to, and touch the camera to your eyebrow.
Ah. So that's like a solid, as long as you don't have a mushy eyebrow. ChrisMarquardt.com to go. That's the place to go for more tips from our great photography genius, Chris Marquardt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We didn't mention ran out of time before we could mention our assignment. Chris Marquardt gives us an assignment every month just to encourage you to take pictures. There's no prize. There's not even really much honor involved in it. What we want you to do is take a picture to illustrate the word or a concept. Let me see the assignment here. I can't remember what the assignment is. Should have asked Chris before I let him go. what was it? Do you remember, folks? I'm going to Flickr.com and the Tech Guy group on Flickr. You were, Heather, you remember?
Wasn't it Bubbles?
No, we did Bubbles. Green. Or did we?
Oh, Green.
It was Green.
Right.
You know, it should have been a giveaway when I went to the Flickr page and the entire page is bright green. Okay. So, here's what you want to do. You want to take a picture of something. It doesn't have to be the color green, but illustrating the word or concept green. You can upload one a week to our Flickr group. That's Flickr.com. It's free to become a Flickr member. And but then you have to join the Tech Guy group. Tag it with the word green so we know. We've already got some submissions, but a few more weeks, so there's more chances for you to submit. Flickr.com, Tech Guy group, take a picture of green. It could be with your smartphone. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. In fact, some of the best pictures are with smartphones. And then we will pick three. Chris will pick three, and we'll review them in a couple of weeks. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Back to the phones. We go. Mark is in Alabama. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, just trucking along.
What can I do for you, my brother trucker?
Well, I got two questions and a comment. The first question is probably the easiest one. Being a truck driver, I use the Wi-Fi hotspots from truck stops.
Right.
But sometimes I have to park in the back of the parking lot.
Right.
And I get really lousy signal.
Right.
Is there anything that I can buy that will grab that signal and amplify it so my laptop can pick it up?
Oh, you bet. Now, of course, there's other reasons why you're getting bad signals because, what I hear from my truck driver friends is so many drivers, all the drivers now are using the Wi-Fi at the truck stops that it's getting a little congested.
I can understand that for the bandwidth, for the speed.
Yeah. But it wouldn't explain, you're right, the one bar or so forth.
Exactly, yeah. The one or two bars. If it's less than two bars, I usually can't pick it up at all.
So it depends on how serious you want to get. There's a website for this called Radio Labs at radiolabs.com that specializes in directional antennas, high-power antennas. Remember that just amplifying the gain on what you receive is not necessarily going to help you because you're only amplifying one end, but it's going to be the reception will be better, and it might be enough to make a difference. They have all sorts of, directional and amplified. Directional will probably be the right thing for you if you know where the access point is.
It's usually on top of the truck stop building itself, so that's pretty easy to find.
If you can see it, that's a good that's a good start. C. Crane, the great radio company, does make some inexpensive Wi-Fi antennas. Our experience with those has been they help a little, but not a lot. Amazon sells some more elaborate Yagi, Yagi's a directional antenna style, about $100. But if you really want to learn the ins and outs, and I think you need to, you really kind of need, more than I can just tell you on what you need, I would go to Radio Labs.
Okay, radiolabs.com.
You got it.
Okay. And the second question is an irritant, okay?
All right.
On my laptop, I have all my desktop icons arranged the way I like them. I turn the laptop off, I turn it back on, and they're all straight up and down on the left side of the screen.
I hate it when that happens.
Right now, and I've tried everything. I've tried locking them, unlocking them, refreshing the screen, the whole nine yards.
What version of Windows are you using?
7.
Hmm. I remember this used to happen a lot in Windows 98. I haven't heard of it lately. You don't have another screen attached, do you?
No.
And you have not turned on auto-arrange icons. You've looked at those settings specifically.
Yeah, I looked at those. I turned auto-arrange on and then turned it off again to see if maybe it was sticking.
Right.
No difference.
Yeah, it's
right now I'm using desktop okay to save my icon settings, but I have to open it and click on reset.
Right. This will happen if you have an external monitor, and it's a real annoyance for me if I go to a bigger monitor, all my cleverly arranged stuff gets messed up, and then I go back to the old monitor. But if you're not doing that and your resolution isn't changing, it's probably the preferences where these are set. Is damaged. That's done in the, I believe that's done in the, it's a resource So you're going to have to open it up. I hate to say, how about this? Here's how you could tell. Create a new profile, or maybe you have a second profile on there, and log out of your existing profile, log into the new one, see if the same thing happens.
Okay, so create a second account.
Second account, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you can. There's products you can use. Chat rooms shouting at me, Stardock's fences. But yeah, there's products you can use. But I think what we want to do is fix this, because Windows should not be losing the place. And the fact that it's doing that makes me think you might have other issues as well. So let's not patch it over with a Band-Aid. Let's find out. So try logging out of your profile, logging into a new account, and seeing if the same thing happens. If it does. Well, and it's a little bit tricky.
Then I might have picked up a virus.
No. You know, this happens all the time. Stuff gets corrupted. A stray cosmic ray strikes the desktop, flips a bit. More likely, the file can't be modified. I don't know where those icon positions are stored. So I'm not sure where to go to fix it. You'd have to do some research. But if that happens, if you log out of your profile, log in another one, and the icons stay where they belong in the new profile, then it's something attached to your profile, probably a corrupt preference setting.
Okay, and to fix that, I'd probably have to use my Windows disk and repair it.
Yeah, you might try. You could try something like CCleaner.
Okay.
To just,
I've got CCleaner, and I've ran it a couple of times.
Oh, okay. Because I would bet that it's stored in the registry, but if it's not, then I don't know what to say. Because the CCleaner will wipe out the icon cache. That's one of the things. Check that setting, and then you'll start.
I don't know if I've checked that setting specifically or not. Yeah. I will look at that next.
And then there are other programs that can mess with, like, you don't use WebRoot's window washer, do you?
No.
Okay. There are other programs that can mess with this.
Okay.
So anyway, there's a few things to try. And I think the best diagnostic is to see if it happens in other accounts.
Okay. I can do that. And now if I may, just a real quick comment.
Yeah.
I just did a podcast 2 weeks ago.
And you're a truck driver? Come on.
Yeah, well, and I downloaded all of your podcasts.
Great.
Listened to them all last week, and for the last couple of weeks, you've been talking about cars that drive themselves.
Yes, autonomous vehicles, yeah.
And you keep saying that it's going to lead to the demise of private ownership of cars.
That's one of the possible outcomes of it, that according to autonomous vehicle designers, yeah.
I say it will never happen, because have you ever looked in some people's cars?
You get a better vantage point than I do. What do you see? I ask?
Some of them look like trash cans on wheels.
They live in them, yeah.
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 And, you know, I don't want to drive something after somebody else has been driving.
Well, I think it takes some time to get to that point. If you don't always drive the same vehicle, it is presumed. I know my rental cars are usually pretty tidy.
Yeah, but the thing is, with your rental cars, they go back to a central place and get cleaned up.
Well, these might, too. This doesn't presume that that's not happening.
That'd be a little bit on the expensive side for the company, though.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's very expensive to own. The point being that it's extremely expensive for individuals and for us as a society to have a vehicle per person, per adult driver. And so the idea would be that it would be more affordable for you as an individual. Obviously, you're going to own your own truck or you're going to lease it. But if you're not a professional, if you just use a car to get around, that would be cheaper for you to do this, you know, ad hoc solution. Than to own a car that is idle most of the time. There's a number of services that do this. Tokyo Jim's telling me in the chat room that shared car services like Car2Go deal with this, because they'll charge you if you leave the car dirty. They will come out and clean it and then bill you. That might be the quick and easy solution to that. If people don't feel like they own the car, it's not their living room, maybe they'll be a little neater. I don't know. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today is brought to you by Ting.com. You know, we live in a world where new business models are emerging all the time. Ting was started by my friend Elliot Noss, who runs Two Cows, which is a great, it's been around for a long time, a great company. Elliot's mission in life, and I love this, is to take businesses that do not serve its customers very well and kind of reinvent them. He did it with domain name management with hover.com. And I can't think of any business category that is more annoying, less serving to their customers than the mobile phone industry, right? So he's now taken it on with Ting, and I wish more people knew about it. I really think this is a great idea. So Ting is reselling Sprint service. I don't know why Sprint lets them do this, but they do. In fact, Sprint seems to love Ting. Even though really the message of Ting is don't use Sprint, use us because we're better. If you go to techguy.ting.com, techguy.ting.com, we have a special deal for you. You can take a little browse around. You'll see my smiling face there. Love your netcast? How about your phone company? Ting Ting welcomes the Tech Guy listeners. So here's a couple of places to look. Look at plans first, because the idea of Ting is there's no contract, no early termination fee, no bundling or ride-along services, but even better, you pay only for what you use. So it starts with the phones, and Ting is great for families or businesses where, because you can have any number of phones sharing a single account. Let's say a family of four phones, $24 a month to start. Then you choose your plans. We're going to say 1,000 shared minutes, 2,000 shared messages, but 3 gigabytes of data. Now, that's just serving suggestion. By the way, all of that, $110 a month for all four of you. $110 a month for all four. Compare that to your existing cell phone bill, your family plan. For me, it's about a quarter what I pay right now. But here's the beauty part. If you go from 1,000 minutes to 2,000 minutes, well, they just charge you the difference, $17. If you use 1,000 messages, not 2,000 messages, they rebate you to the difference. More data, you pay for it at the same rate. Less, you get the money back. You never pay for more than you use, and you never get a penalty for using more than you paid for. Best of all, you get all of this free. Voicemail, picture and video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID, tethering and hotspotting included. No additional fee. No add-on charges. There's no mysterious line items in your bill. You can have unlimited devices on a single shared plan. They have a great account control panel. No hold customer support at 855-TING-FTW. If you call them during business hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, a real business person will answer the phone who's empowered to fix your problem. They won't put you on hold. They won't transfer you. There's also a great help forum at help.ting.com. They've got video tutorials, setup guides. Look at the coverage map. It's on the nationwide Sprint network, so if you've got good Sprint coverage, it's a great place for you. This dashboard is so sweet. I wish everybody would do this. This is so great. And you can even bring your existing Sprint device to Ting, although they have all of the phones, including the Galaxy S4. Now, because it's not subsidized, you're going to pay a higher price. However, you can take $25 off on checkout when you use our offer code techguy.ting.com. Of course, you own the phone and it's unlocked, so that's nice too. Techguy.ting.com, or bring your existing phone. They'll unlock it for you and get you going. Love it. Ting's the thing. Techguy.ting.com. You actual humans. not Python scripts. Actual humans will answer the phone. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet. Cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. Tomorrow's a big day for Apple fans. The Worldwide Developers Conference begins in San Francisco. It is the one event all year long that's scheduled that Apple can talk to not only developers, but the rest of us, Apple users, and tell us what's going on. So there's always a lot of interest. We believe Tim Cook will be giving the keynote address at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow morning. And, of course, all the tech blogs will cover it. We cover it on our podcast network. We do live coverage at twit.tv. Depending on whether Apple offers us to stream, usually they don't. So we have moles inside the event, and of course, all the tech blogs are there. And we sit there, they feed us information, and we do Ronald Reagan-style reenactments. Tim Cook comes to the plate. Here's the pitch. The crowd goes wild. He's hit a home run. That kind of thing. So we'll re... I did last time we did this with puppets. I don't know if how well that went over with Apple. I don't know if I had a Tim Cook puppet. I don't know if we'll do the puppet this year. But you can do a reenactment just by talking. What will we see tomorrow? Well, we're not sure because Apple doesn't say, but the rumor mill has been working overtime, and we're pretty sure that we will we know we'll hear about two things because Apple has said the next version of iOS, its operating system for the iPhone and the iPad, iOS 7. We think it will be a little different because the man who used to be in charge, Scott Forstall, was fired this year, and Apple's world-famous designer, Sir Johnny Ive, has taken over, and he's the guy who did the iPod, the iPhone. He's an amazing designer, and people think there'll be a kind of a new look for iOS 7. We'll see. Tomorrow we'll find out. They'll also talk about the next version of OS 10, which should be interesting because they've run out of big cats. So we don't... OS 10, as you know, is the most recent one is Mountain Lion. Before that was Lion. Before that was Snow Leopard. Actually, if I run through all of them, it was Kodiak, Cheetah, Puma, Jaguar, Panther, Tiger, Leopard, Snow Leopard, Lion, and Mountain Lion. Grumpy Cat? I don't know what's left. They've done Cougar is a Mountain Lion, so I don't think they're going to do Cougar. A Lynx is a Puma. I mean, I guess they could do Lynx. Sea Lion? Tabby Cat? I don't know. Sabretooth. We don't know. This is Liger for the Napoleon Dynamite fans. That's what's kind of fun about this is that the rumor mill seems completely empty on this one. Nobody knows what they're going to name it. But we will hear, I presume, the name and the code name anyway, and a little bit more about what to expect in the next version of Apple's desktop operating system. Also likely, although, again, just rumor, Apple is not saying that we'll see new laptops from Apple, new MacBook Pros, perhaps new MacBook Airs. The rumor mill says a 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display that is super thin, almost as thin as a MacBook Air. That's the one I'll be looking for. If they announce that, I'm buying it. that's my sweet spot right there. I do love the MacBook Air, but I'm so used to the Retina now. The Retina displays on both the iOS devices and on the laptops, I just think they look great. They're very high resolution. So we'll be interested. I doubt very much. I think it's almost certain they will not announce a new iPhone or a new iPad at this event tomorrow. They might hint at it because certainly a new iPhone and iPad will be running the next version of iOS, iOS 7. So there might be some hints, but I don't think they'll announce anything. That's coming this fall. And professional users, editors, designers, photographers are all very interested if Apple will update its 2.5-year-old Mac Pro model. Where Tim Cook said last year that there would be something for Mac Pro users this year. He didn't say there'd be another Mac Pro. He just said there'd be something for us. I don't know what that means. But there are some rumors that there might be a replacement for the Mac Pro announced tomorrow. So that's what to look for. That's kind of your bingo list, your checklist. If you want to know what happens, we'll talk about it, of course, next weekend. And if you can't wait till then, tune in. TWIT.TV will begin our live coverage tomorrow morning around 9:30 Pacific time, 12:30 Eastern. Let's see. We got a break coming up, but I'll see if I can get another call squeezed in here, or at least start it. Cheryl in Garden Grove, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Cheryl.
Oh, hi, Leo.
Sorry to keep you on hold so darn long.
That's okay. I put it on speakerphone so
good.
I can stay on cue.
Thanks for picking up. What can I do for you?
Well, I'm not a real techie person. I'm 60, but I've been coming up to speed slowly. And I've had a computer since it's the Dell. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been about since 2003.
Oh, well, you're a geek then. You qualify. ten years, it's like common law marriage. You're automatically a geek.
Well, between Enviro efforts and shopping, I think it's driven me up to some kind of competency.
Yeah. You're using it to shop. That's good. You're in the modern world.
And Enviro. Lots of political and Enviro efforts.
Isn't it great? I have to say, this is, to me, part of the promise of digital technology is its power. It makes the individual powerful. Suddenly you have a printing press. You have a bully pulpit. You have a forum.
Yeah, a voice.
And I love that.
Yes, I do too.
Well, good for you.
My problem is that I can't update. I have that small office XP disk that my computer just won't adopt.
Yeah, and it's so important to update because that's for security. And you hear me talk about this all the time.
Yes,
it may
I
be
do.
The single most important thing you do. It isn't unusual for Microsoft Windows update to get blocked, usually by a failed update.
Mm.
And so the new updates presume that all the other updates have been applied. And so if you get stuck at one, it just won't go on. It says, you know, I'm not going to give you new updates until we get this solved.
Yeah, it keeps coming back to that.
Right.
And I keep trying, and I get, you know, internet even comes on and does a connectivity test.
Yeah.
And then they try to assist me. But it goes to one, and I need to get all three updated. There are three packages.
Yes.
And I can't do it.
So,
and then it performs better for a while, and then it starts repeating the drag and the stuck. And,
yeah. No, you need to do this just for security alone. And the problem is this happens so often that Microsoft has a whole page devoted to troubleshooting problems with install updates. I'm going to put a link in our show notes, Tech Guy Labs, to this. It's about 30 different things you can try. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I was talking to H-Bomb, Heather Hammond, my cohort here. And I was saying, you know, take it away, Heather. And it was silent. You could do a show if you wanted to. If we flipped positions, maybe we should do this on our 1,000th episode. You come in here, you do the show, I'll answer the phone. What do you think?
Oh, my God. That's more of an April Fool's joke. Whatever, boss.
you started out in radio on the air.
Right, right.
You did traffic, and then you were on, what station were you on?
Oh, God. Name a station I wasn't on. That'd be easier.
Really?
Yeah, because
yeah,
you're
everybody
a
in radio has moved
everything.
Around.
Yeah.
But you were in a morning zoo crew or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, Wild 107 when it was Wild 107.
Wild 107.
And
what part did you play?
Always like sidekick traffic news, something
right,
like that.
Right.
Sidekick.
The wise crackin' broad.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. every morning show has the wise crackin' broad.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see you doing that.
Yeah.
So who should I talk to next?
Oh my gosh! After I thought that
wise,
was Wendy,
wise crackin' broad. who should I talk to?
How about Dan in Chesapeake, line two?
I can do that, Chesapeake, Virginia. Hey, Dan, Leo Laporte. Thank you, Heather. The tech.
Yes.
Guy.
Good afternoon, Leo. How are you?
I
know you're fine. Everybody asked you that question.
Everybody asks it. I don't mind. I'm fine. Thank you very much for asking. How are you today, sir?
I'm wonderful. Just standing by. Didn't even wait that long. Can't complain at all.
That's because Heather and I decided to bump you up because you're going to be such a great caller.
All right. Well, I hope so. I have an HTC One. I love the design. I think it's a beautifully designed phone. I've listened to your comments about battery life. I don't have that issue because I'm always so close to a power source. Love the front-facing speakers. Bit the bullet. Switched from Verizon to AT&T about a month and a half ago. So the phone's about a month and a half old.
Yeah.
I have a notification sound set on the phone, which is a sound from Back to the Future. It's just a little ringing sound.
Yeah.
So last couple of days ago, and you're going to get a kick out of this, it's connected to my computer. I'm dropping the Twit Network podcasts from iTunes over to my phone.
Yeah.
That's how I do. I update them all on the audio, MP3, so I can listen to them at work.
And you copy them over. All right, yeah.
And then I listen to them at work.
Okay.
So I finish copying them. I disconnect the USB cable from the phone, and my notification sound, the Back to the Future sound, screeches out of the phone at like five times normal volume.
Yow! That hurts.
Dead. I'm talking about dead. No power,
what?
No lights.
Oh, wow.
No reboot, no soft boot, no nothing.
That's dead.
So I call AT&T. I have
what a way to go.
A month and a half old. Here's my question.
Yeah.
And this goes in keeping with your theme of data, privacy, everything else. Well, I couldn't wipe the phone, obviously, because it's dead.
You couldn't.
It won't power up.
You couldn't. You're right.
So my question is, when I return that to AT&T, and I called them, and I couldn't get a good answer from them. If it's dead, they can't get anything onto it.
Not so.
Can I be confident that my data will be safe or that phone will be destroyed? What happens to the phone at that point?
Well, I doubt that they're doing anything, but given the recent revelations, who knows?
Well, it's a concern. I mean, obviously...
They can pull stuff off of there. There's, you know, depends what went wrong. That sounds like a pretty severe death.
Right.
But you can open up the phone. You can take out the circuit board. You can attack. If they look, nothing's going to happen to it. They're going to grind it up.
Well, that's what I was hoping.
But if you were under investigation by the FBI, then maybe, or worse, the IRS. I'm more scared of them. Then maybe they would say, hey, you know that guy? He just brought his phone in. Can we borrow that for a minute? And if they have a subpoena, there's nothing to stop them from getting from AT&T. And in fact, the history of AT&T is they pretty much say, yeah, sure, whatever you want, anytime.
Right. Well, I can't open the phone up because
you're
then they're going to charge me $45.
You're stuck. There's nothing you can do. And really, in a way, that kind of highlights a big problem with this phone, the iPhone, the Nexus 4, any sealed phone. Not only can you not change the battery if the battery dies, you can't get into it. And
right.
That means, you know, unless you're willing to void the warranty and you have some skills and the right tools, there's no user serviceable parts. This thing is really to be treated as a disposable consumer good.
Right.
And I think that's a shame because, frankly, what that tells me is they're going to end up in the landfill.
Right. Yeah, I know that's always been a concern of yours. So, best case scenario is they get the phone back, it's dead, and they grind it up, and I don't have to worry about the data.
They don't have enough time to snoop on everybody's phone. Only if you were, you know, a person of interest. You're not a person of interest, are you?
I'm not. I have a top secret security clearance. I'm good to go. I've already been checked out.
There you go. But you understand that there's thousands of these coming back all the time. And by the way, that's a dead phone. These things happen. I hope they treated you well, and then they'll say, oh, no problem. We'll give you a new one.
Yes, AT&T, they didn't even charge me the shipping fee or anything.
They shouldn't. They shouldn't.
I'm a little disappointed that I couldn't get a replacement at the store, but I understand it was a warranty issue. So it'll arrive on Tuesday.
Good.
I'll set it up, no problem. I was just really concerned about the fact that my data was on that phone.
It still is, in all likelihood. You know, it depends how it died and why it died. If it was a big power surge, it might be everything's fried in it. It sounds like it was a pretty catastrophic death.
Right. So. No, I have UPSs on all my equipment. I was on my computer at the time. No power glitches, no problem at all. I think it was just a hardware failure.
Yeah.
Fatal failure.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be able to get anything back.
Probably
I guess
not.
I'm just looking for some reassurance.
Yeah, and I can't because it's unknown.
Right.
It's unknown. You know, they may grind it up. They may take it apart and scavenge the parts out of it, the screen and stuff. If they do that, well, they will certainly wipe the memory.
Right.
Because they don't want somebody else to get your phone.
Thank you very much. Enjoy all your shows.
Thank you. I appreciate your listening. It's a really good question because it happens to us all the time. If you bring in a laptop for repair, back up your hard drive for sure because you may not get it back. And what happens to it? I know for a fact because I've been told this multiple times that every time you leave your keys with a valet or a car repair shop, they go through your glove box, look for CDs. They can copy any music. I have a 32 gig USB key, you know, USB drive on my key. I always take it off when I give them my keys because otherwise they guarantee you they check it. I've talked to many guys who work as valets and work in service shops. They say, oh, yeah, that's routine. We're going to see what kind of music you have and we'll take it. So, you know, it's not unlikely that there is that, you know, AT&T. I doubt very much AT&T has implemented a secure data policy for returned phones. There's some guy, you know, taking the phone, I don't know, taking it apart. And it happens all the time. 8888-ASK-LEO. Now, let me tell you what happens to the data from this show. It goes through the brain of James DeRuvo, who then writes it down on our website, techguylabs.com. It is later massaged and triaged and camouflaged by Mr. Josh Windisch, who then adds audio and video of each and every question. So you can go there and techguylabs.com, find a question, see my answer, and most importantly, add your comments. So please do for all of our shows. Techguylabs.com. It's free. Another big billion-dollar plus acquisition. I tell you, every time I see one of these happening, I think that another 10,000 16-year-old kids decide, I think I'm going to become a computer programmer. You know, Instagram, Kevin Systrom and company started that company. It was about a year, maybe not even quite a year, before they sold it to Facebook for $1 billion. Chad Hurley and Steve Chen started YouTube. And about 18 months later, sold it to Google for more than $2 billion. We should write some software, Heather. We got to come up with a plan.
My million-dollar idea. I always forget it the next morning.
Yeah, yeah. I had a great idea once.
Write it down on a cocktail napkin.
Yeah, it's not the idea, as I've learned. It's really not the idea. There are a lot of companies came up with YouTube before YouTube. So the latest is Waze. Do you use Waze? I love Waze. Have you ever used Waze?
No.
Oh, it's a crowdsourced mapping program. Comes out of Israel. They claim about 50 or 60 million users now. I use it whenever I have to go somewhere because as you're driving down the highway, Waze is, you know, it's like Apple Maps or Google Maps. You tell it where you wanted to go and it gives you turn-by-turn directions. But as you're driving down the highway, if you see a police officer hiding in a bush or you see debris on the road or you see, other issues, slow traffic or whatever, you can let other Wazers know. By tapping on the screen, or actually because you're driving, waving in front of the screen. You wave your hand in front of the screen, and then you talk to it. You say, report traffic. It also monitors how fast you're going, so it knows if the road is congested or not.
Right, road sensors.
Right. Yeah, well.
Something similar, but.
Nothing's better than Waze. Right. If you haven't used Waze, you got to use it.
I sure will.
Just love Waze. So, there have been rumors about Waze being sold for some time. Last year, Apple supposedly, although they denied it, was interested. Apple has its own problems with maps. then Facebook was in the market for Waze. Waze apparently turned them down. They said, no, you haven't offered us enough money. So now, according to Israeli source Globes, which apparently I'm told by the chat room is very reliable. Let's go, says Waze. I'm navigating home.
Is she the kind of girl you'd like to go home with?
No, she's a little robotic, frankly. A little mechanical in her emotions. She's just going through the motion. Google is going to buy Waze for, ka-ching, $1.3 billion. $1.3 billion. The founders of Waze will make anywhere from $70 to $80 million themselves, including the CTO and the president and the vice president, senior vice president. That's some good money. Mm-hmm. And the people who are really going to make out on this one are the venture capitalists who invested in Waze, including California Kleiner Perkins. They put hundreds of millions of dollars into this, so they're going to take hundreds of millions and more out. $1.3 billion. This will make Google Maps even more collaborative, which I think is great. One of the reasons I would actually prefer to use Google Maps. And Google Maps has some of these features, but they're not front and center. So I think putting them front and center would be great. I tell you, Waze has saved my life many times. When I just say, and it doesn't say anything. It just reroutes you automatically. So I was coming home from the airport, and it turned out that Highway 80 out here was just jammed, not moving. I didn't know that, but I listened to Waze, and Waze said, "Get off now, go to." And we went down back streets, and the lady said, "Turn left here, turn right here, turn left, right, left." Then I got back on the highway. I said, "Wow, what was that all about?" And I found out later the traffic was a dead standstill, and she saved me from a fate worse than death.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, Waze is phenomenal. It also has like rewards if you help enough people, report enough problems, you get special icons and things like that.
You get a limousine ride.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. So Waze really took off during the Apple Maps fiasco. It became the number one downloaded app on iPhones. And I think a lot of people discovered it then. So the hope is, and I think Google has said this, one of the reasons Waze turned down Facebook, according to this Globes article, is that Facebook wanted to move everybody from Israel to Mountain View or wherever Facebook is in the Silicon Valley. And they didn't want to go. They wanted to stay home. And Google already has an office in Israel. They've acquired two other smaller Israeli companies. And The story is that Google will let Waze be Waze and not try to absorb it into the Googleplex. And that's what they did with YouTube. YouTube is very much an autonomous operation. It's you know it's Google, but it doesn't shout it in your face. So good news. One of our chatters says, if you help enough people, you get a free ride in the Google self-driving car. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Don next in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Hi, Don. Leo Laporte.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, a long-time listener. I had some things happen with an all-in-one printer. I want to run by you and see what your thoughts are.
All right.
By coincidence, my brother and I both bought the same all-in-one printer, and we didn't know it. And I had problems with the drivers getting corrupted every 60 days.
Ugh.
I was on Windows XP Service Pack 3, and he was on a Mac. And I saw him 6 months after we purchased, and he said, well, gee, I never had any problems whatsoever with this printer. And, of course, mine kept having driver problems. Long story short, they gave me another model. It was a Hewlett-Packard and had less – it was more stable but still had some corruption issues. I just learned a few days ago from a senior technician working for Hewlett-Packard that they believe Windows Update is responsible for corrupting drivers
on not our fault.
Many different printers.
So not our fault. No, it wouldn't be anything we're doing wrong. It's got to be those other guys screwing it up.
And I had it confirmed by several companies that they believe Windows Update is the reason their drivers get corrupted. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on the matter.
Never heard of it happening before. I don't believe it. Okay. HP is not my favorite company. It hasn't been in some time. It's possible that, you know, one of the things Windows Update will do is update drivers for third-party hardware, like your printer. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that I haven't seen a huge amount of evidence that that's happening. It's certainly possible. But I also would point out that it's very common for companies to say it's the other guy's fault.
Of course.
You know, so...
Well, I'm glad I asked you because I respect your opinion and I didn't know who to believe at the
time. What do you do to fix it when your driver gets corrupted? Do you delete it and start over?
What they simply do is their technicians uninstall and reinstall,
right,
and then things are fine for a while.
I think Windows, especially you have a fairly old version of Windows, I think, which means probably you're not getting a lot of new drivers for HP printers. But my guess would be that the print spooler is getting corrupted, and it's a problem. It may well be a problem with Windows. It's not unusual for this to happen in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that the driver is getting corrupted, but more that there's just a problem in general with Windows and the spoolers. And I've heard about this happening with other printers as well. So, you know, you might want to go to Windows 7. You're using a pretty old version of Windows.
That's right. I do have a laptop with Windows 7.
So it is conceivable. Have you had that problem with the laptop?
Well, I haven't used it much with the printer.
Yeah. It is conceivable that the Windows Update would download a bad driver. It does happen from time to time. HP may have, there may be some merit to HP's argument. There's no way you could get to the bottom of it. I haven't seen any widespread complaints about that. So if it really were a big problem, I think we would see it. People in the chat room, a few of them are saying, yes, this happens. But I don't think enough to really say this is a widespread problem. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask. Leo, that's the number. Last segment for the week. The Tech Guy Show tomorrow. Again, if you want to see our live coverage, maybe you're at work, you'd like to keep up on what's going on with the Apple conference. Our live coverage, we'll actually start with Microsoft's press conference at E3, 9:30 Pacific, 12:30 Eastern time. You can watch our stream at twit.tv. It's kind of fun to kind of do these live conference coverage. It's exciting. It's when we get our biggest audience, too. It's kind of, you know, these are geek news stories. These are big geek news days. Jeff is in Moreno Valley, California, our next caller. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great, Jeff. How you doing?
Oh, not bad. I'm a little frustrated, though. I'm trying to get some more hard drive space on my computer. I've got a Mac Pro that's from 06, and it came with 249 gigabytes, so a whopping 249.
And I am a struggling filmmaker, and, you know, it's about a gig for each minute of video, it seems.
Yeah.
And it's just killing me.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get, like, a secondary terabyte drive.
Good.
Along with an external hard drive for backup and another gig of RAM, so I'm ready for Final Cut Pro soon. I've been using iMovie. But my question is it okay to use off-brand parts and not Mac parts?
Sometimes, yeah, it's always okay because a Mac is basically a PC at this point, even in 2006. Sure. Occasionally, you'll run into problems with cabling, wiring being different. For instance, I bought a video card, PC video card for my Mac Pro. You got to check to make sure the drivers are available. They were, but I also had to buy additional dongles and things because the layout was different, the connectors were different, and so forth.
Sure. Because the one thing I found is I put a gig in last year, and it's like 3 gigs is what I have now of RAM, but it only reads as 2.
Well, that's so that's why I always buy things from Otherworld Computing, MacSales.com.
Okay.
Or if you're going to buy RAM, you could get it from Kingston or Corsair, but use the RAM Finder to make sure. Crucial.
And these are comparable to Mac parts.
Yeah, because what it'll say is this is the RAM you need for. That. Now, it may be that Mac Pro, that's pretty old. It may be it couldn't even see more RAM. I mean, that may be that was just...
I get one more. There's 2 slots left.
Yeah, but having the slots is not the only factor in what it can see.
Oh. Okay.
So that motherboard may just say, hey, 2 gigs, that's all I can do. Who would ever need more than that?
More slots, I mean...
Who would ever need more than that? So if you go to everymac.com, you can look up the details on your machine, and it'll actually tell you... That was the first Intel Mac Pro, so
right, yeah.
Early days.
Yeah, definitely.
Early days.
Fine for me, so I've been having a good time with it. But
yeah, you know, I mean, it's a decent processor. The new Xeon processors that they'll have this year, I'm sure. In fact, I bet you you'll hear a new Mac Pro tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. These are the old Clovertown processors. Wow. Are not bad. They're not bad. Configured with 1 gig of DDR2 ECC, fully buffered FBDIMM memory.
Right.
Don't see here where it says the limits on how much RAM, but I'm
trying to get Final Cut Pro going. And
yeah, no. And it may really be that you can't put more in, that you know, you could put more sticks in, but it wouldn't be seen. I don't know. You'll have to do some research to find out about that.
All right, Leo. Well, thank you so much.
Hey, my pleasure. What are you editing? What kind of films?
I do a lot of, right now, art videos that are up on Vimeo.
Awesome.
And like, I went on a big road trip recently and took a bunch of shots from Oregon, Washington, the Redwoods, and have a friend that has a band, and I put it to their music.
Awesome.
I do sketch comedy shows on YouTube and short films.
What's your YouTube channel?
It's Sparks 1138.
SPARKS
1138.
1138. Like THX. Somebody in our chat room says, no, I have the same Mac Pro. It goes up to 16 gigs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So go to Crucial or somewhere that has a RAM finder. Just make sure you're getting the right kind.
Will you have all this info you just told me on your notes somewhere?
Yes, we will.
Awesome. All right, Leo.
Everymac.com. Hey, thanks for the call. Good luck. Sparks 1138. I'm going to check out the comedy. Chris in Frankfort, Kentucky. Hi, Chris. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes. I'm here.
Yes. What can I do for you?
Hi.
Hi.
This is Chris Ziegler.
Yeah. Welcome. You're on.
Oh, my question is, I'm visually impaired, and we all know Windows 8 has Flash Player built into it, and I'm visually impaired.
Yep.
And the
It's okay. Take a deep breath. It's okay. Just you and me, dude. Are you a little nervous, Chris?
No, I'm a little, this room's a little warm. Sorry. Oh. And
don't pass out on me now. Don't faint. I've not had a call. I've not lost a caller yet. In my 27 years of broadcasting, but I guess it's always possible.
So. Well, my question is with getting rid of the flash that doesn't get in my way.
Yeah, you don't really need flash nowadays. Apple really put a flag in the sand and they said, we're not going to put flash in our iPhones or our iPads. And because they are so dominant, most websites have finally said, okay, all right. For instance, YouTube, you have a choice. You can use flash, but if you go to youtube.com/HTML5, they'll say, hey, do you want to opt in for HTML5? Then you won't need Flash. And you say yes, it won't use Flash anymore. I wish more sites did that. Unfortunately, streaming video is the one last bastion of Flash. For instance, if you want to watch our show, twit.tv, most of our providers, justin.tv and BitGravity, are Flash only. The good news is we pay for a non-Flash stream, and Ustream, one of our really great streaming partners, Ustream.tv, now has a non-Flash stream. So everybody's moving in that direction. So get rid of Flash. Flash is a security problem, too. I mentioned this last hour that, you know, the way nowadays people get infected is by going off onto the internet, visiting infected sites. But those sites have to take advantage of flaws in your system. Microsoft and Apple have been very good at keeping their systems patched. So the bad guys are now saying, well, what else can we use? Where else can we go? What third-party apps can we attack? And because they don't get updated as much. So they go after the browsers. They go after the browser plugins, Flash, Acrobat Reader, Adobe Reader, and Java, which are all used by your browser when you get on the online. Those things have huge security flaws, and the bad guys are founding them. And that's why you're seeing so many updates. So if you don't need Java, if you don't need Adobe Reader, if you don't need Flash, the best thing to do is uninstall. Just get rid of it. Now, it does come with Chrome, and I don't think there's any way to uninstall it with Chrome. But at least Chrome keeps it up to date. Google keeps Flash up to date on Chrome, not Adobe. Hey, it's good to talk to you, Chris. It's great to talk to all of you. A reminder, we put our show notes up on the website for free anytime. You can search them. You can visit techguylabs.com. I put links there when we talk about websites that are useful or ideas or even, you know, just the pros and cons. We also put audio and video up after the fact. You can get the podcast and listen to it at any time at your convenience. Or just watch the video, the YouTube video right there on our website. If you heard a question, you want to know more, you can go directly to that question, listen to it, watch it. And this is important to me, if you've got a thought or a comment or a suggestion, you couldn't get through on the line, don't worry. That's what our comments section is for. Add your comments there. You'll make the site more valuable. And I promise, always free, so anybody can go back and hear what you have to say as well. That's techguylabs.com. Thanks, Nathan, our musical director. Thanks, Heather, our call screener. Great to have you. Have a great week. Tomorrow, Apple reveals all. Sorry. Thank you. Bye, Heather. It's okay. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.